31. The interior of the cave remained utter bedlam until Martin and Philip removed the false wolf. Dragons swirled, billowing plumes of fire erupted almost constantly, and solid gold lag bolts and sheet metal screws were thrown around the room like waves on a rocky shore. But when they made the wolf go away, the chaos didn't fully stop. The dragons had a head of steam up, and they couldn't just turn it off like a light switch. So while the fire stopped, the speed of the swirling and the frequency of the golden hardware showers only lessened. Martin and Philip huddled behind a large gold I-beam for refuge and had to shout to converse.
"Well," Martin said, "that worked less well than we hoped. We took away the things that were scaring them. What can we do to calm them down?"
They heard a particularly loud crash, then a large wave of solid gold hex nuts broke over them. When the onslaught had subsided, Martin grabbed a handful off the ground, looked at them in his hand, and said,
"Nuts!"
"Yes," Philip said. "I know. Anyway, if we put something down the dragons, like..."
"No," Martin said. "I meant nuts, like an exclamation, like damn or drat."
Philip said,
"Yes, I know.
It was a kind of joke."
"The kind I don't laugh at. Now, if I may continue, if we create something the dragons like, maybe they'll calm down."
"Yeah, okay. I'll be right back."
Martin pulled out the wooden box he used to conceal his smartphone. He swiped a few times, tapped a few times, then disappeared. Less than a second later, he reappeared, apparently unchanged.
"Where did you go?"
Philip asked.
"Home Depot. It's a store from my time. I needed to get something."
He pointed his staff at the floor. A large roll of pre-grown sod appeared, laying over on its side like a Swiss roll made of grass and dirt. Martin flew sneakily. Since flying made no sound, flying sneakily mainly meant flying slowly, with his shoulders hunched, as if tiptoeing, over to the passageway, levitating the turf roll along in front of him. He placed it on the floor in front of the passage which led outside, then reached down with the end of his staff and nudged the cylinder. It unrolled like a carpet into a strip of lush green grass. He darted back behind the I-beam with Philip to await the results. The four dragons still looped and banked around the interior of the cave, but they had slowed considerably over time. Now one of them slowed even more. It banked a little tighter, then hovered, flapping mightily in the center of the chamber, the other three dragons still whizzing around it like protons. The dragon looked at the green rectangle on the floor, then advanced, landing next to it. It looked closer, sniffed, and then started eating. The other three dragons hadn't noticed the grass on their own, but the sight of a dragon eating grass got their attention. Soon all three of them hovered, flapping like swimmers treading water, watching the fourth dragon enjoying its snack.
"The patch is too small for more than one dragon," Philip said.
"Agreed, I'm on it."
Martin pointed his staff and created three more rolls on the ground in front of the opening.
"Now that I've got the sod rolls in the system, I can make as many as we need. When this is all done, I think I might redo the floor in Gary's cave."
Philip said,
"A nice green lawn. He'd hate that. I'll help."
Martin flew toward the opening and unrolled the bundles of sod, then circled around the back of the chamber. He noted that what had been an immense but orderly storeroom full of itemized golden building materials was now a random field of mixed objects, all blending together to form an indeterminably deep pool full of items made of solid gold. By the time he had circumnavigated the room and rejoined Philip, the three dragons had landed and were enjoying the grass as much as the first dragon had. Martin said,
"That seemed to work."
"Yes," Philip agreed. "But what will happen when they run out of grass, like that one's about to do?"
The first dragon had reduced his patch of lawn to little more than crumbling dirt, and now looked to the other dragon's grass with jealous eyes. The placement of the three other dragons gave Martin little room to work with, so he carefully aimed his staff, rifle style, at a spot behind the dragons, further down the passage to the outside world, said the secret phrase, and created another roll. The dragon went for it immediately. It muscled its way past the other dragons, nudged the roll of turf open with its nose, and started chowing down.
"Huh,"
Martin said. That is interesting.
Indeed,
Philip agreed. They both flew sneakily past the eating dragons and landed in the passageway, and looked at the light coming from the outside world off in the far distance.
I bet if we could get them out in the open,
Philip said,
we could get them going fast enough to fly through the goal. Or we could get them all into the passage, then put a goal at each end. Eventually, they'd have to go through one or the other.
Martin said, yeah, I'm not sure I want to wait for eventually. They've shown us that they're perfectly willing to sit around waiting for something to happen. What if once they're out in the open, we just somehow drop the goal down over the top of them, kind of like a net?
I doubt that would work.
Whatever. Either way, we agree that it would be good to get the dragons outside. Philip nodded, then pointed to the empty floor between them and the cave entrance and said,
sod it.
Martin stared at him. Philip said,
it's a joke, because that kind of grass is called sod. And in England,
Martin said, I get it. It's a joke. Not the kind of joke I laugh at. One side, please. Martin pointed his staff rifle style again, and in a few seconds had created a line of sod rolls, as neat as Pac-Man pellets, down the center of the passage all the way to the cave entrance. The dragons at the rear crowded past the lead dragon to get to the fresh rolls of turf. After a few minutes, an organized system emerged where the last dragon in line would finish its tiny bit of lawn, then squeeze around the other three dragons to get to fresh grass, and take up the lead position. Progress came slowly, but the trend seemed to be leading inexorably outside. Martin and Philip walked ahead of the dragons, keeping their distance and watching the giant creatures at all times. Aside from glancing at the light coming from the end of the tunnel at the very beginning of their trip to the surface, neither of them had really bothered to look outside, or even behind them, as they carefully backed out of the cave, leading the dragon parade. The further down the tunnel they progressed, the brighter the distant light behind them got. Eventually, tiny pinpricks of light started to dance on the dark walls around them as faint traces of daylight reflected off Martin's sequined robe and hat. As such, they were surprised when Neith came sprinting into the tunnel behind them.
Oh, good! I thought I saw your robe,
he said to Martin.
I need your help.
With what now?
Philip asked. Neith squinted in Philip's general direction. His eyes had not yet fully adjusted to the dark, a problem that Martin's shiny robe did not help. He finally got a lock on Philip's general position and said,
Dragons!
You need our help with dragons? Martin asked.
Yes!
We know that. We're helping you with dragons. Look! Martin muttered the spell that turned the head of his staff into a lantern. White light streamed out of the eyes of the bust of Santo that topped his staff, illuminating the dragons. One ate while a second crowded past. They both looked up at the light. The two dragons behind them peeked through wherever they could find a gap to see the source of the sudden bright light. The sight of them gave the impression of a massive army of dragons, but Martin knew there were only four. Neith didn't know that, or at least had forgotten, and let out a yelp.
Yeah, Martin said. Dragons! We are helping you with your dragons.
Martin?
Philip said.
I don't think those are the dragons he's referring to. Look outside.
Martin turned. They were near the cave opening now, and through it they could see the piles of hay they'd created earlier in a misguided attempt to lure the dragons out. While that had not worked, the hay had somehow caught the attention of the other two dragons in the area and drawn them in. They had nearly eaten all of the hay. One of the two dragons nosed through what remained. The other peered down the tunnel at them.
They flew over a while ago and saw the straw, Neith said. They were between me and the cave. I didn't dare risk running in to get you until I saw that you were close and could protect me.
Martin said,
This could be good.
Philip said,
Move back!
The three of them had been distracted and were standing between one of the dragons and the next roll of grass. They skedaddled with great efficiency past several rolls before skidding to a stop. They were now close enough to the opening to feel a faint breeze, smell the scent of hay, and see the light filtering around the two new dragons. One grazed on the last roll of sod, just inside the tunnel entrance. The other crowded its way in to see what was so interesting. Philip said,
I'm sorry, Martin. I believe you were saying something about how this situation was a good thing.
Martin looked at the four dragons advancing slowly from one direction, blocking access to the deeper cave. Then he looked at the two dragons opposite them, blocking their only means of escape. Martin counted the meager five rolls of turf now between them and mentally estimated the rate at which the dragons were closing in.
I was saying that, yes, Martin admitted. But the situation is fluid.
Neith whined.
We're gonna die.
Philip put a reassuring hand on his shoulder and said,
No, Neith, the dragons are scary, but they can't kill a wizard.
Neith whined.
I'm gonna die.
No, Philip said. We are not going to let you die. We are going to get out of this.
Yeah, good, Martin said. What's the plan?
Philip said,
I suppose step one would be to ask you if you have any ideas.
The four dragons continued to advance.
Maybe we should stop actively luring them towards us, Martin said.
Philip said,
Sensible.
Martin made the three remaining rolls disappear, leaving him, Philip, and Neith alone between the dragons.
Now they have nothing to eat but us!
Neith cried.
It was Philip's idea, Martin said.
Philip said,
Be quiet.
Martin said,
Don't try to deny it.
Quiet, Martin.
Philip whispered.
Neith, my associate and I can just magic ourselves out of here if need be, and I promise we'll take you with us. But I don't think that will be necessary. It's dark, they can't see us well. I don't want them to hear us either, because they won't try to eat what they don't know is here.
The three tried to be silent, looking at the shadowy forms of the dragons. Time seemed to stand still. They heard shuffling sounds deeper within the cave, like something very large moving slowly. The sound continued and grew until the closest of the four dragons from the cave, and the only one they could see with any real clarity, turned around and shuffled back the direction it had come. The forms of the four dragons mostly eclipsed the light from the main chamber. The men watched the indistinct mass recede into the dark. Martin whispered,
Four down, two to...
Then shoved Philip and Neith backward until they all pressed up against the wall of the cavern. Neither of them had to ask why. Philip had seen it first, but now that they were looking somewhere other than toward the gold vault, they could see the two dragons from the outside were following the others. Martin, Philip, and Neith pressed themselves hard against the wall and scarcely breathed as the behemoths ambled by. When they passed completely, Neith staggered out into the middle of the passage and watched the dragons go. Martin and Philip sat down on the ground and enjoyed the sensation of not being completely bottled in by dragons. As the last dragon rounded the corner and disappeared into the main chamber, Neith said,
Well, that's just great! Now there are even more dragons in there with my gold!
Martin said,
Look at the bright side. Now all of the dragons are in one place.